Hey everybody, welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay and Jack. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Sansa.
That's what you came up with.
I'm Sansa.
Sansa.
I'm just but you got to picture me. I'm just staring straight with no emotion.
Okay. All right.
I'm Sansa.
So it's a visual game.
It's visual.
On a podcast.
Yeah. It's the dark hair. It's the dark hair makes her depressed.
I don't think I want to go with you. So there.
I feel so bad. I feel so bad.
I'm listening to Butterfinger.
Butterfinger.
I don't know his name. I don't know his name. I'm Sansa. Should Sansa have been killed off a while ago?
No, I just I feel bad for Brienne because like she keeps trying to like, you know, swear her sword to people and she just keeps getting rejected.
Now, that happens in life. Sometimes people just don't want your sword. I mean, it's what it is.
No means no. well, we had another new episode of Game of Thrones 2 nights ago. It was a very good episode. I really enjoyed it. Still set, kind of re-bringing back in all the characters, explored some other ones we get in the first episode. What did you guys think of the episode before we get into the recap? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It had a little bit. A little bit was slow, but I still enjoyed it quite a bit.
I thought the book was better.
Oh, yeah.
Well, speaking of books, we got feedback on our Facebook group. A lot of positive feedback about bringing it back. And Nick, everybody loves you. You're a great addition. And part of that feedback as well is some people concerned about the book content being interspersed throughout the recap and not having the choice to not learn more stuff about the book. So... in response to that, we're going to have our book discussion after listener feedback. So that way, if you don't want to listen to it, you can just turn off the podcast after you hear listener feedback.
Actually, no, most of the people that loved him were from the North. How unusual is that?
The North of Westeros. Yeah.
King of the North.
King of the North. But all the bluebellies seem to like Nick. I don't know what it was.
For those who don't know, Nick is a southern gentleman from Tennessee, living in California.
It's true.
But anywho, so guys, what do you say we get into our Game of Thrones recap?
Let's go.
All right, here we go.
Do it.
All right, guys, this is the House of White and Black. So appropriately, it starts with Arya on her ship to Braavos.
Yeah, that's also the only new thing we see in the opening credits is Braavos, and I wanted to give a little bit of history of Braavos just to people, because it's not mentioned a lot in the show. Braavos is, in my mind, it's always a cross between Venice, Italy, and Amsterdam, Netherlands, because it's a city built on little small islands, so it's like Amsterdam, and most all the streets are canals. But it's also like Netherlands in the way that it has a huge banking system, which Netherlands, it, you know, 200-300 years ago was the largest bank in the world. So that's, I tend to think that's where George R. Martin drew his inspiration from for that city. It's also the, it's of all the free cities, it's the only one that wasn't founded by Old Valyria, which is where all the Targaryens originally came from. It actually was originally settled by escaped slaves. So it's why it's a really interesting city. It's an international city. All people from everywhere are welcome there, and all religions are accepted. So it truly is an international city.
Oh, that's cool. That's neat. Didn't know the history. And again, I'm going to, you know, kind of show my ignorance to the history of Game of Thrones. So the Targaryens are kind of the original rulers of all of this. So all of these other kings with Baratheon and everything are kind of more recent.
Yeah, well, okay. There was a land called Valyria a long, long time ago, and it was kind of like Mordor, if you want to think of it. It's just full of volcanoes and very wealthy. It's where all those, like, the Valyrian swords that, like, Brienne had, that ice was made, that Eddard Stark had, that was of that Valyrian steel, which is extremely rare and extremely valuable. But yeah, like the Targaryens were actually not a really powerful family within Valyria, but they chose to leave, and they founded a home on Dragonstone, which is that island that Stannis lived on for a long time. And then after a few hundred years, their family decided to just conquer Westeros with the only dragons that remained in the world at the time, because Valyria actually imploded, kind of like Pompeii did. It just was And so all the people who lived there were no longer. So, but they had established these colonies throughout the world, and Volantis is the largest one, because it's the closest one to Old Valyria, where Tyrion and Varys are headed to. But it's in the south of Essos, whereas Imbravos is in the north. So,
nice.
So yeah, so it's been a few hundred years and a long time. But yeah, if you can go buy the History of Westeros book that came out, I think last November. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the Silmarillion for Tolkien. It's just an extensive history of Westeros and Essos and the history of the a world of ice and fire. So it fills in a lot of backstory.
That's cool. Awesome. Yeah. Well, good to know. So Arya is making her trek and is dropped in front of the House of White and Black.
Right. She, you see her entering the city, and she's looking up at this huge statue, which is called the Titan, which is the only way in and out of Braavos. It's used for protection, and there's actually soldiers and all kinds of things stationed inside the statue in case a warship enters.
Now, is that kind of based on one of the Seven Wonders of the World, the what Statue of Liberty is based off of? What's the name of that?
I can't think of the name of the statue either, but it was right there between like Gibraltar and Africa.
Yeah. Anyway, but yes, cool. But
you're how she says she's not afraid.
She's never. Yeah, she grasps her sword, a needle. You know, like
Yeah. I'm not afraid.
It's just a front. Like yeah, but
she's tough. I'll give her this. She's tough.
Oh yeah, she's my favorite character. I think I literally would stop reading and watching if George R. Martin killed her off. It would be furious.
That would be the final straw for you. Not everybody else, but her.
Yeah, for me. Yeah, just he's one of the few, even though he has an interesting way he writes women. Like he either writes them as a really vicious or you know they're strong women, but there some people still object to that. It's like they're all strong women, just in different ways in the series. So
of the hundreds of people killed on this show, that's where you draw the line.
Exactly. Well, Arya is my favorite main character, and Ygritte was my favorite minor character. And so, which is strange for me to go that route, but it was. But So Arya's dropped off. You see the captain row her to the House of Black and White, and you know if they actually had zoomed out a little bit more, you should see many buildings of religion all right there together. But they just show the one though of the House of Black and White, and then she thanks him by saying Valar Morghulis, which is very common in the book, and for people who don't know, that means all men must die. And he replies to her, Valar Dahaeris, which means all men must serve, which is kind of just their phrase that they say back and forth to each other. Mm-hmm. So she knocks at the door and is answered by an elderly man who basically just refuses her entry, even though she has the coin and says that, you know, I have the coin, you know, and she mentions Jaqen H'ghar's name, and he basically says, I've never heard of him, slams the door in her face, and she just sits, you know, like, okay, what now?
Yes. That's a little tough. But you could kind of feel it was definitely that kind of, you know, master and the pupil, the test. This is a test. That's what I was kind of feeling.
Exactly, yeah.
I was just thinking the guy was a jerk. She's sitting out in the rain. She's in the sun. She's repeating the people she wants to kill over and over again.
But you kind of get that kung fu kind of feel to it. Like, like your test. She's testing her, and she actually does kind of try to wait it out and sits there all night and recites her names, people she wants to kill. And then just gets up in the morning and tosses the coin in the water like, oh, heck with this, and then moves on.
This coin is useless.
Well, then we go to Brienne and Pod, and they run into Littlefinger and Sansa at the very nice pub and inn.
That's right.
It was a sweet place. Yeah,
it was nice. Yeah, and you see Pod working his women's skills.
Yeah,
is he?
I'll take another glass of ale.
I'll have ale.
Yeah.
I can ride a horse properly.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
But yeah, you see them eating, and you also see Littlefinger and Sansa in a private booth. And Sansa inquires Littlefinger about the note that he, in the previous episode, that he'd stuffed in his sleeve. And he responds basically just saying his marriage proposal had been accepted. And that's as far as he goes with it, always a man of secrets. Pod notices Littlefinger and Sansa eating and informs Brienne that they're there to Brienne's surprise. And she tells Pod to grab the horses, to which he says, "We don't have any." You know? Yeah. So,
get some.
Go get some then. Yeah. But yeah, I was actually quite shocked. Brienne just, you know, bravely just walked right up there and said, you know, "Hello, Littlefinger and Sansa."
Well, she's always been that way. She's not. She doesn't have any.
There's no fear in her.
No fear in her, and she just goes. I think she's a bull in a china shop. Just goes straight on. She doesn't have where Littlefinger would think things out. Brienne just goes, "This is my job. This is my mission. I'm doing it."
Yeah, she's very determined. That's for sure.
Right.
But yeah, she basically makes the same deal she made with Arya. Like, you know, "I was sworn to protect your mother. Now I want to protect you." To which Littlefinger shoots her down pretty quick, and even Sansa says, "No, I don't want you."
Yeah. So, well, he does make a good point. So you're supposed to protect him, and he's dead.
Yeah.
You're supposed to protect him, and he's dead. And she was supposed to protect her, and she's dead. So he did make a good case.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And I didn't even think about it either until he really said that, you know, because she kind of goes, "What is it? What business is this to you?" And he does. He has power over her now because he's kind of her legal guardian.
Right.
Through marriage. And I was like, wow, yeah. Even though he's only married to her aunt for, what, like 2 days, you know?
And he killed the aunt.
And he killed her, yeah.
Allegedly.
Spoiler alert.
Allegedly.
No, and then so after that, she kind of pieces out, and then they kind of make a run for it.
Right.
Pod doesn't do too good of a job taming his horse.
We see how skilled he is in riding a horse. But
anyone,
yeah,
anyone think he was going to die during this scene?
I thought he was. Yeah.
Me too.
Because I didn't think about him. He never rides a horse. It was always Tyrion that was riding, or Brienne, so he doesn't know how to ride. And then, yeah, like once he falls off the horse, I'm like, oh, he's done. Like, the guy's going to come riding by and just cut him in half, you know.
Yeah.
But then we see the true force of Valyrian steel cut the sword in half. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, just one swipe and kills the guy. And then Brienne decides to pursue Sansa anyway and try to protect her even from a distance. So
she doesn't want me near her, but I'll protect her from afar.
No, no doesn't mean no in this case. You know, like just
I got this, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh man. So then we can go to King's Landing, and yes. Cersei and Jaime receive a lovely little gift.
Yeah, it's a fairly short scene, but yeah, like Jaime opens up a box that's in front of Cersei, and it's with a stuffed snake inside, and the Myrcella's necklace is in its mouth.
Mm-hmm.
She sees it as a threat, naturally it is, and becomes angry. Because I think she honestly feels that she's losing her children. I mean, her oldest boy just died. Myrcella is in a foreign land where people hate her and hate their family. And then, of course, she's losing her youngest boy to Margaery and the Tyrells.
She calls a whore.
She calls a whore.
So I'm not thinking there's going to be a great relationship there.
Yeah. But I mean, what does anyone really have a good relationship with their mother-in-law? I don't think so. You know, but
I'll plead the fifth.
Okay. I love my mother-in-law. She's the best.
Yeah.
There you go.
Jaime just
still plead the fifth.
Jaime just basically promises Cersei then that he's going to go to Dorne to get their daughter back. And
she ripped him pretty good though.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he made, you know, she says, "You never, you know, now you're the father, you never," and he made a good point. If I said I was the father, they'd kill her.
Yeah.
And us.
Yeah, and us. Yeah. I mean, there was no, he couldn't be the father. He couldn't come out publicly. I mean, I think she's just upset right now.
She's lashing out a little bit.
And she blames him for the, you know, her dad dying and stuff like that, being killed. But
yeah.
And that's a little, what are you going to do with your one arm, or basically what she said? Yeah.
Exactly.
You're going to go by yourself? Anyway, I felt bad for him.
Yeah. And then we go to Dorne, and we have.
No, you missed a scene.
Oh, did I miss?
Miss Bronn.
Bronn, sorry, Bronn. Yes.
Yeah. My favorite character. You just cut him out.
Well, you know, it was a short scene. I apologize, but yes, Bronn surveying his castle. He never thought he would have.
Right. This is actually a really interesting scene. I mean, I'll get into the later part of the podcast to describe what's interesting about it, but. Yeah, you see Bronn walking with his wife, who you kind of feels a little bit light between the ears. And he's just gloating, like, I can't believe I'm going to be... Oh, but to set this up a little bit, you know, if no one remembers out there, Bronn was promised a lordship and a castle by Cersei if he didn't fight for Tyrion in his trial by combat. So that's why he is now a wealthy man, or somewhat wealthy man. But you see him gloating, like he's like, ah, I've got everything I want now. And then his bride is like, oh, I'm not getting any of this.
I listen to you talk nonstop for two hours and I get none of this? Man. Yeah.
But you kind of get that feeling in his eyes, you know, him kind of going, you know, good things always come to those who are mean, you know. Yeah. he's already plotting the death of her older sister. So like, oh.
And he was, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. You know, he doesn't care. He just wants what's his.
Yep.
And then Jaime Lannister shows up out of nowhere to ask him to come to Dorne with him to rescue Myrcella. And it didn't really show it that well. I had to watch it for the second time to really see it, but the piece of paper that he gives Bronn is basically showing that Cersei already backstabbed Bronn, saying you know, that his future wife has already been promised to someone else. So now he probably says a lordship, but he doesn't have the wedding anymore to get his land.
Okay.
So it basically forced Bronn to say, okay, I'll go with you. But, you know, Jaime does say, I'll get you a better castle and a better wife. So it'll be all good.
If you live.
If you live, yes.
Yes, and then we go to Dorne, and we have, is it Ilaria? Is that how you pronounce it properly? Ilaria? Ilaria?
I butcher the names, so yeah, Ilaria is how I would say it, or Illyria, or something. Yeah, Ilaria.
And then we have Oberyn's brother, Doran Martell,
right.
And she's not very happy that Doran is taking the more diplomatic approach.
Right. Basically, yeah, he's just sitting there in the water guard. Well, she's first observing Marcella and Prince Trystain, which is it's Doran's son, who will be the future prince, and that's who he's supposed to be marrying, Marcella. And she doesn't like that because now the Lannisters will be ruling King's Landing and Dorne in some capacity. And then she goes to the prince to demand revenge for Oberyn's death, which he, you know, very intelligently says, no, he died by legal means in a duel. So what do you want me to do about it?
We also said we don't kill children.
We don't, yeah.
Torture too, yeah.
We don't torture children. And so, you know, we're not them.
Right. But she explains that the sand snakes are with her, which the sand snakes, to explain to people, are Oberyn's bastard daughters, and he has many of them. But instead of raising them to be little good princesses, he raised all of them to be warriors like the way he was. So they're all very vicious women. So that should be interesting if we get to see them, which I think we do get to see some later. So,
well, cool. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And then in Meereen, we have Daario and Grey Worm and more of some of Daenerys' soldiers hunting down the Sons of the Harpy.
Right. Yeah. Daario is trying to teach Grey Worm how to infiltrate and find some of these members of the Sons of the Harpy, which they do find one and capture him and take him in for questioning.
It was cool how they found him, though.
It really was. I didn't expect that.
Because he asked him, "Are you afraid?" He goes, "We're never afraid." He goes, "Well, maybe you should be." He took his knife.
Yeah.
I thought it was a fun scene. I didn't see that coming. It was a good scene.
Yeah. And then it moves to Dany's council, to where Mossador, who's a former slave, is advocating for the death of the prisoner, while Ser Barristan is advocating for a fair trial.
Right.
And they bicker back and forth about who is really behind this, and they assume it's the wealthy families who are just paying regular citizens to disrupt Dany's rule because they want, naturally, the slave ex-slave owners want their power back.
Mm-hmm.
But
and then Barristan had that great story about the Mad King. That was nice.
Right. That's what it gets to. They adjourn the meeting, and Ser Barristan sticks around because he wants to tell her about her father and how justice should be done. You know, he's actually... That's what's great about, I think, her council, is they're trying to teach her things and not just letting her do as she wills. He even says, I have to tell you about the Mad King, which she kind of arrogantly mocks at, like, oh, you mean the lies about my father? And he's like, no, he really was mad. You know?
Yeah.
And Yeah, because he said, you know, he gave the people his version of justice by burning them alive, you know, and so that is what ultimately led to rebellion, is doing what just the ruler thought. So, you know, hearing this, she goes, okay, I guess I'll give the man a trial. So,
But
well, like I said, he's trying to teach her how to be a queen, how to be a leader, and she doesn't get it yet.
Yeah, not yet, not yet. No. And we'll explore that a little bit further down the road in this episode. But then we go to Tyrion with Varys, and they're going towards Volantis in a bit of a nicer digs than the poop hole box.
Yeah, but just a little.
But yeah, he's still doing the same thing, heavily drinking and tired of being in a box. So, yeah. Which is basically the scene. You know, him. It kind of felt a little redundant, but that's kind of the same way the book is in this part. You know, because he's just in a box for a lot of the time. But it's for good reason though, and Varys tells him that it's because Cersei has offered a lordship to anyone who brings Tyrion. I mean, brings her Tyrion's head. So he has to be careful because if you know, like Varys said also in the last episode, if they find Tyrion, they find him. And so it means both of them will be dead.
Yep.
But what was more interesting to me in this scene was that, you know, Tyrion is feeling down, but he's feeling down, it seemed, because he murdered Shay. And you see that he just feels guilty for what he's did and what he's given up. And, you know, he kind of says that there at the end, that she wanted him to leave and he should have left, but he enjoyed having that power way too much to think past that. So.
Yeah. And well, we go to the dwarf head then getting plopped on the table in front of Cersei. So now there's cutting random people's heads off, which is sad.
Yeah, that's what's it was just, you notice it's a dwarf's head with a scar across the face, and you don't know if it was that guy had a scar or was the scar put on there after they cut the guy's head off, just thinking, oh, all dwarfs look alike. You're never quite sure. All
right.
It's kind of messed up. And then you have Qyburn is going to use it for whatever purposes he's going to use it for, which is, this guy is really creepy, and I'm sure this is going to lead to something, but just really weird.
Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting theories out there about Qyburn, which I won't get into, but some of them I really think, if it's true, could be a really interesting character twist for him.
Yeah. But
we'll see.
We then didn't go to a council for the Hand of the King, even though right. There isn't really one.
Right. We see Maester Pycelle, Kevin Lannister, Lord Tyrell awaiting Cersei and Qyburn. And Cersei kind of just plops herself in the Hand of the King seat, to which most of them are really wondering what she's doing in there. But Cersei's claims that she's basically acting as hand until her son can pick one for herself, which is what she's always wanted, is power, and she's finally getting it. And no one really can argue with her, except which is really a cool scene between Kevin Lannister, her uncle, and her, basically putting her in her place, saying, you know, you're no one, you have no power. But go ahead.
Well, no, I just, it's, sure, you're not a real person, but as of right now, she has power. But is she even really wielding it well?
Right. I mean, if you remember last season, Tywin even told her to her face, you know, you're smart, but you're not as smart as you think you are.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that we'll see that, you know, with some of her mistakes, because that's all she cares about. She thinks that she's smarter than everyone in King's Landing and in probably Westeros.
Now, she doesn't talk about Varys at all because, you know, he's not on that council anymore. Is that discussed, or does she know that he betrayed as part of that, or is it just he's gone and they're replacing and not really thinking about it too much?
Well, in the show, I think in the very last episode of last season, one line is said that they suspected Varys is the one that helped Tyrion escape.
Okay. Okay.
And so they just, I think, just naturally assumed that he's a traitor now.
Okay. Cool. They didn't really talk about much. I couldn't really recall.
Right. They did. They kind of glossed over that.
And then we go to the north, and we have Shireen teaching Gilly how to read.
Yeah. She knows S. So.
Snake.
Gilly. Yeah. Every time I hear that, that's all I think of that.
Yeah, like we see Shireen Baratheon, who is Stannis' daughter, teaching Gilly how to read, and it turns into a a discussion about her grayscale, which is a disease of the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly in Essos. You don't see it often in Westeros. And it just, you hear them discussing like what it does to people. Because I think we're going to see it probably later on this season. So they want the audience to know mm-hmm. what, so if you see anyone else, but most people die from it and they actually turn to stone, like to stone people.
Interesting.
And oh, really?
Yeah. So
is it a disease or is it a curse? Like what?
It's a disease. And basically, it's passed by like, kind of like zombies. Like if you're bit or cut and mm-hmm. you get it and then slowly it'll spread from that where your cut was and your skin just becomes really, really hard like stone. And then eventually it just takes over and you basically die and just, but you'll always be, your body will be there forever like a rock.
So well, at least you, you know, move, live on in that way or last on
yeah.
that
way. Hey, here's my buddy.
And then we have an interesting discussion between Stannis and Jon Snow post Mercy killing.
Yeah, we have a long, oh, actually quite a long scene here yeah. in the North. Yeah, you have Stannis talking to Jon, and Stannis is disappointed in Jon for killing Mance with the arrow because, in Stannis' words, a king's word is the law, and by Jon killing him with the arrow, it made Stannis look weak. And of course, it's odd for Stannis to forgive him though, but it's because Stannis needs him.
Yeah,
and he said, you know, like if it's important for later on in the episode, but like you know, he says if you show mercy, then people don't fear you. If people don't fear you, then people won't follow you. Which Jon replies, the free folk will never follow you because you killed their leader. So, you know, it's harsh for probably for Stannis to hear this because his hopes for conquering the North kind of rest on having a larger army. And he's probably panicking a little bit, wanting to know what to do.
Yeah, because at this point he's probably, I mean, just the undertaking of kind of moving your own army to the North, the sheer cost of that, and then trying to maintain and conquer it, it is not a easy undertaking.
Oh, yeah, and then feeding them, it's just no telling.
Yeah.
Let's see. But it does have some cute things. I really enjoyed Stannis reading that little note from the girl from Bear Island, you know, saying, we only know one ruler, and his name is Stark, you know. Yeah. Actually, looks cute. A 10-year-old girl being witty to the king.
Yeah.
The conversation though then turns to the election of the new Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, which is expected for Alistair Thorne to win, which is mm-hmm. the guy who has always picked on Jon from day one.
Yep.
Right.
Let's see here. But Stannis, though, out of surprise, offers Jon a really good deal. He said, you know, this guy's going to be the new Lord Commander, so why don't you kneel before me and I'll legitimize you as an actual Stark and then name you the new Lord of Winterfell, which just shocks Jon to death.
Yeah. You
know? I thought he might take it.
Yeah, it was definitely a smart thing to do if he wanted to.
Like you said, it's what he always wanted.
Yeah. And that's what leads to the next scene is the actual election of the Lord Commander. And you see Jon and Sam talking about this. It's what he always wanted. And but I mean, Jon, just like Ned, he's too honorable, and he thinks about it. He was like, you know, if I don't keep my word to the Night's Watch, then why would anyone follow me?
Right.
When I break that word, so
I mean, he was right, but at first I thought, well, he's going to take that's a great deal.
But is it right though? I mean, I think it's almost the foolishness of Ned Stark, where okay, sure, you have your honor, but where that lead for Ned Stark, his head chopped off. You know, in the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. And I don't know if it's a very smart move to turn that down.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you don't feel anyway that Jon has a lot of friends in the North from at the Wall, from what, you know, what Alistair Thorne saying to him mm-hmm. about being a wildling lover. And then, but I mean, anyway. But you see the election begin, though, and Maester Aemon speaks up, and two people are nominated. You have Alistair Thorne, mm-hmm. and you have Sir Dennis Malister from the Shadow Tower. And for those who don't know, there's three active Night's Watch towers along the Wall. You have one, it's called East Watch by the Sea, which is right on the water, which is across from Braavos.
Yeah.
And then you have the one in the middle, which is Castle Black, and then you have the Shadow Tower, which is at the foot of this ice river on the western side of the neck. So.
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know.
And then Sam, good old Sam, puts sticks up and throws John's name into the hat.
Right. Yeah, and it kind of comes as a shock to John because I don't think he really wanted it. But yeah. But yeah, he does. And he speaks up very well for John and makes a really good case, which I think wins over the majority of the people there who are voting. And then you see that it's basically when they start voting, it's a tie between Jon Snow and Sir Malister from the Shadow Tower. Alistair Thorne didn't even get half the votes that Jon and Malister got.
Oh, so it's a tie between those two? I thought Malister was the...
No, because you hear it just when Maester Aemon speaks up. He says the triangle pieces will be for Sir Malister.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay, I agreed with Jay. I was with Jay, but yeah, you're right.
And then when you look at them, you see it's the triangle ones that are up there with John's.
Yeah.
And so, but it's a tie until Maester Aemon puts his last token down and wins it for Jon Snow. So he's the new Lord
Winter
Commander.
Winter is coming.
I looked it up. The 998th Lord Commander. Lord Commander.
Didn't they say it in the episode?
I think they did.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Okay, I thought.
But here's the thing. Now he's the Lord Commander, so what does that do for the whole Stannith Baratheon plan? It's just, I don't know, Jon Snow is putting himself in danger. Just saying.
Yeah. We'll see how good of a leader Jon Snow is.
They're not killing Jon Snow.
I'm just saying. It's George R.R. Martin. Yeah. We then go to Arya, who takes the head off a pigeon.
Exactly. She's killing pigeons. That should send her to New York. Yeah. I don't know if she's planning on eating that or not.
That's because she walked away with it, but it can't be. Well, I don't know if pigeons are good. Are they kind of gamey tasting?
Well,
I don't know.
When you don't have any food.
Yeah.
Pigeon tastes like chicken.
Yeah. It's almost like a little bit of a throwback to the end of season one, where she goes up to that baker and is like, "How about a nice fat pigeon?" You know,
right?
If you remember that. But yeah. But as she's walking away, she bumps into three boys who want her sword, which seems to always get her in trouble. But
sword get them in. All right.
But the duel is broken up before it even begins because the old man shows back up again from the House of Black and White, and they run off. And he takes – it's almost – to me, it seemed almost like that scene from Star Wars where Ben Kenobi shows up and chases off the sand people. Like, he just and then they just
– Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, he takes her to the House of Black and White, flips her back the coin that she threw in the water, and reveals himself as Jaqen H'ghar.
Woohoo!
I was like, what?
A fan favorite, so it's cool to see him again.
It really was, yeah. Then – she says, he basically says, "I am no one." And then, not that he's not Jaqen H'ghar, "I'm no one." And then they enter the House of Black and White.
Ooh wee.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we go back to Meereen, right? Yeah. Where they kind of have this trial. And what was the gentleman that, kills the guy?
Right. Mossador, who's an ex slave. Mm-hmm. Is seen entering the cell of the prisoner who is from the Son of the Harpy, and they basically execute him and leave his body up for public display.
Yeah.
Danny basically tells him that he had no right to do this and orders that he is to be executed.
Yeah.
I think it's a mistake.
Yeah, even her advisors amongst themselves say it's a mistake because she does it publicly before amongst the ex-slaves and the ex-masters. And you see them, the slaves, ex-slaves, just crying for mercy to their mother, and she executes him anyway. And I thought this was an interesting scene just because it echoes exactly what Stannis was just saying to Jon, and that even though these people are begging for mercy – and you kind of see the frustration in her eyes that she kind of wants to, but she doesn't. She kills him anyway because she's thinking mercy will show that she's weak. But by killing him, though, the people actually turn on her And you see them all hissing at her, and then they start throwing rocks at the X-Masters, and a fight breaks out. And she has...
And that's where she has to have a higher level understanding of leadership and people, in that there's a difference between showing mercy and causing basically chaos and a riot, which is what happened there. So,
well, I can't remember which character it was, said just should have beheaded him inside the pyramid.
Yeah, it was Dario.
Yeah, instead of being so transparent, sometimes you can't be transparent. Sometimes you have to be deceitful.
Well, I think in her mind, she was thinking, well, I was going to show people justice with the trial, so now I'll show justice this way. But it almost was what Sir Barristan was saying. It wasn't a trial, though. She just executed him because she could.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So again, it's some growing pains for old Daenerys. Yeah. And she kind of wants to go out in her balcony, her alone. The big dragon comes back. What's the name of that one? Does it have a name?
Drogon.
Drogon comes back.
Yeah, the black one is Drogon, and it's the biggest one. But yeah, the nighttime's there, and she hears something. She walks out, and he's sitting on the top of the high pyramid. And for a second there, you almost kind of fear that he's going to eat her.
I was worried of that.
Yeah. And what happened before, I wouldn't have been shocked by it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everyone's turned, you know, the slaves have turned on her. You know, they're throwing rocks in her direction and stuff like that. So I wouldn't have been shocked if that would have happened.
Yeah. Well, it's Danny, so you would have been shocked if he killed another main character. Like, what the heck? You know, but...
No, not on that. I don't think, because like I was like, is she going to get killed off? Is she going to get killed off? I can't believe they'll kill her off. But I thought that's what was going to happen.
I it's too soon for that. But yeah, I don't know. It's, but the dragon flew off anyway, so she still doesn't really have control over dragons. And this is where I could see, Tyrion, being able to help her out. If he does go and joins her side of the things. Like, I could see those people being a good source for her because he's smart in those areas that she is not.
Right. He's savvy. He's politically savvy.
Yeah.
He's a survivor.
Right. Well, I mean, she's been sheltered most of her life, and she doesn't really know how to think critically and about people, whereas he's a student of history. He knows what it's like to be a minority and be picked upon. So he thinks, you know, I think he even says it in season one, you know, his weapon is his mind. It's not, you know, it's his sword or anything else.
Yeah.
So,
so that's what does have me excited about having them there.
Right.
But that's it. That's it for this episode. Again, a lot of still setting up and those kinds of things. But another good episode, I thought.
Yes.
I thought really good episode, I thought.
Yes, absolutely. And that brings us to our next segment, which is listener feedback. We have one phone call.
Woohoo!
Are you guys ready?
We are.
All right, here you go.
Hey, Jay and Jack, and I guess Nick. It's Chuck from Houston. I just wanted to call about something that I thought of in the middle of the podcast today about Mance Rayder, actually. He was a... interesting choice that he had that Stannis gave him to kind of betray his values and to live. And the comparison between that and the decision that Ned Stark made in the first season to betray his values to protect, I guess it was Sansa. The interesting thing that Ned went ahead and betrayed his values in order to protect her, but in the end it didn't help him anyway. And in this case, then Mance Rayder won't give up his values. But then he kind of gets some release from Jon Snow. I mean, if you can get caught getting shot in the heart with an arrow, release. But you know what I mean. And it's also an interesting difference between Jon Snow and the former Joffrey about the difference, the how opposite they are. Anyways, it was an interesting thought. It's a great podcast. I'm glad you guys are back doing this. Look forward to hearing more from you. See you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you for that call. Yeah, I mean it's a good point to bring up.
I didn't even think about it, but that does make a lot of sense. I do think getting an arrow into your heart is comforting, though.
Well, I think honestly, getting your head decapitated is probably the quickest death.
Okay, which one? Okay, let's. Would you rather be burned to death or had your head chopped off?
Well, Matt's face sure didn't appreciate it. So,
yeah. So I think they say either drowning or being burned alive. Actually, I hear burning alive isn't as bad as drowning because usually you die from the smoke inhalation before you actually are burned. But again, I've never been burned alive, so I don't know.
Being burned alive, though, you get tied up, so that takes a while. So you're anticipating the whole time, and if you get your head chopped off, you just bend over and
And then and being burned, you're being burned from the feet up, so the head's the last part that's gonna.
Yeah, true.
But I think being beheaded though is pretty bad because I think it's why they got rid of the guillotine. It's because you're still alive after your head gets cut off. At least
that's
for
true. Yeah, you get still.
True, yeah.
I think it's like for 10 minutes or something like that, right?
It's a good while. I don't know if it's 10 minutes, but it's probably around 2 or 3 minutes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there something out there in the web world that has the worst death on Game of Thrones, the most painful, most...
Actually, I think crucifixion's the worst out of all the ways you kill somebody.
The what?
Crucifixion.
Oh, okay.
Like, because you hang there, and eventually your body just, the weight of your body just crushes you.
And I guess they have done that in Game of Thrones, haven't they?
Yeah, the slaves are doing it to the slaves.
Is that on any website? Is that, I'm sure there's a website that has the most gruesome death on Game of Thrones.
If not, there is one now.
Okay.
I would think being eaten by a dragon would be pretty bad, but you, then you'd be known for that guy that got eaten by the dragon.
True. Just like you're the guy that got sucked into the engine on Lost.
Yeah,
you're that guy,
or your Arntz. Everyone knows how Arntz died.
Yeah,
so
well, that's Gary. It was Gary Troop, right? That got sucked into the.
I think so. Yeah. Yep.
Yep. At least he got a name. Yeah, that's true. Does Dragon Guy get it? Does he get a name?
Well, we don't know yet.
It was a boy, wasn't it? It was a boy that got eaten by the dragon, or that got burned by the dragon.
Oh, yeah,
little
the
girl.
Girl, and she got burned by the dragon. So, kind of both.
But. Okay. To answer the caller's question, though, it's kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing. You know, I think Ned, he didn't, you know, he sacrificed his honor because he wanted to save the life or at least the honor of his daughter, you know, and whereas in Mance didn't have any children. So it was all he had to lose was his honor. But he cared about his people. So,
yeah.
And him showing strength to his people, I think it just continues to allow them to show strength. Mm-hmm. So,
well, Benny and Nee would have killed him anyway.
Yeah.
Because he's all about honor and dignity.
Dignity. Anyway. All right. Well, very good.
He was Julius Caesar on Rome.
That's true.
That's right.
So that didn't end well for him either. Spoiler.
All right, well, let's closes up our listener feedback for this episode. We love some more. You can call us at 206-392-311 or send an email to janejack@gmail.com or even lostpodcast@gmail.com. We'll put it on there to talk about and put in for listener feedback. All right, now it's time to close out the show with Nick's book reflections. We're going to have to come up with a better name than that. But anywho.
Reflections with Nick.
Or let's... diving in the book.
What is going on over there? Are you at war?
It's the chair breaks.
Is someone storming your castle? What is going on here? Pour some hot oil on him.
or golden crown. Nick, what are some of the interesting things from the book that connect to this episode?
Okay. I'll just start the same way the show's laid out.
Yeah.
But in the books... in Braavos, when Arya gets to the doors, mm-hmm. Basically she just reveals the coin to the person who opens it, and it's not Jaqen H'ghar. He's not actually doesn't meet her, but she's just allowed in.
Right away she's allowed in.
Right away. But I think it's because there's not that many Arya chapters in books 4 and 5, so they're trying to just show more Braavos and show things that she's doing. So it made sense to kind of say, like, oh, she's there. And then I liked it. I thought it was fine. It was kind of like a straight thing earlier. It's like a kind of like a kung fu thing. Like, let's see if she's really worthy of entering.
Yeah.
So that's one difference. Of course, and then the Brienne and Podrick scene is all brand new. So none of that stuff has happened in the books. Brienne never meets Sansa, so that's a small one.
She never meets Sansa at all?
So far, she hasn't.
So
far, she hasn't. But, you know, you never know. The Bronn and Jaime stuff is really the new stuff. Mm-hmm. Because as far as Bronn is concerned, after book three is over, you don't see him anymore. I think he's mentioned one time after that. He is given the same thing. He's given Castle Stokeworth, and I think he actually does kill the older sister to get the castle, but I'm not sure.
It sounds like something he would do.
It's something you do, yeah. He's promised that, and he's got the cushy life, and that's all you hear. Jaime is actually, and that's how you see where they combine characters to make it more interesting, and I like what they've done with it, because in the book, Jaime is trained how to fight by Sir Ilan Payne, who is the headsman, the guy that has no tongue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he does that because he's a good swordsman, but a man with no tongue can't actually go tell people that Jaime can't fight anymore, because Jaime is, you know, a good swordsman. Okay. So they can't have that out. So Sir Ilan Payne is the one who Jaime actually goes to River Run. There's still a little bit of the war going on, and Jaime goes to end the siege and end the War of the Five Kings in River Run, and that's where he goes instead of Dorne. And Cersei dispatches a member of the Kingsguard to go and get Marcella back.
Okay.
So, I mean, I like it. They combined them, and especially for a TV show, it makes way more sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, because you couldn't have Jaime walking around with a guy who can't talk. That's just not good TV.
Yeah, true.
Or a good podcast.
Or a good podcast. Yeah. Okay.
I think
In Dorne, there's not that much difference either. Dorne Martell isn't what I pictured, because in the books he's described as a man who has gout, severe gout, which is why he just sits there. It's because it hurts him too much to walk.
Right.
And he's probably a little obese because he doesn't walk. Okay. Whereas in the show they're showing him as a thin guy, which that's nothing. But you know, she's demanding vengeance from him to do something. But in the books Dorne is described as a very calculating man. So I would fully expect for one day for him to actually do something to avenge his brother. So, because you can see it there, he's more of a dweller. He likes to think, he's very much like Tyrion. He likes to think things out.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Okay. I have Meereen split into two, but I'll start with the first one. The hunting scene of the Son of the Harpy with the Unsullied is new. In the book, Dany actually creates another army. Because the Unsullied are kind of is her army, and then she creates a police force called the Brazen Beasts to police within the cities, and they're all ex-slaves, and those are the ones who are in charge of keeping the peace within the city. But I guess just for actor's sakes, once again, you know, they said, "Oh, let's give Grey Worm more stuff to do, so he can find this thing." Within the Wall, also the election. There's many people who are nominated for the new commander of the Night's Watch, but they narrowed it down to three for the show. And also it takes several days for them to elect John, because you see Sam really going around being a politician and currying favors and trying to get John elected. And also it takes 2/3 of the votes for one to be elected, not just the one token. So, Alistair was not even in the competition, really. It was Janos, the bald guy, who's the crybaby. He was actually his competition because he was the head of the city watch down in King's Landing.
Okay.
So he, in the book, is the one who actually is his biggest competition. And what seals the fate, it actually ends up being pretty much a tie most of the time between Janos Slant and Jon Snow. But it's something that they couldn't do in the show because it would just be too hard. But Mormont, who was the old Lord Commander, had a crow that he always carried around with him in the book. And its only word it would ever say was corn, because that's what it would be fed. But for some reason, on the last time that they're going to elect, it starts saying snow, snow, snow. And so it's what makes everyone kind of go, it's a sign, you know, and so they vote for Jon Snow.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah.
But again, I see for the TV show that it's not really necessary.
That would just drag it out.
Yeah. exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like most of the stuff in this episode that was altered for the good. So, and the last alterations is the Marine stuff. The Mossador, the ex-slave, is in the books. He's just a minor character, and he's never executed. He's just another guy who likes to voice his opinion to Danny.
Okay.
Nor do the citizens. Of course, he's not executed, so the citizens don't hiss at her, and they don't riot. And also, Drogon is not seen this early on.
Interesting. But, okay, so, all right then. Is this kind of, did they take this from something else, or is this kind of a new development, or is this just to accentuate the fact that she's still learning how to become a leader?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think it is. It's because in the books, to me, it's not really, it is shown in some ways that she's a novice, but I think that they're really trying to drive that in the show to say, like, she's trying her best, but she doesn't know what she's doing yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fine.
Before she made the decision, you can see in her face that she was going, like you had said, that she was trying to, she didn't want to do it, but she didn't want to seem weak. She had said she was going to do it, so she had to do it at that point.
Right.
But you tell she didn't want to do it.
But see, to me, if she was, she kind of had a good sense of it, she wouldn't have done it. She would have found some other way to get around it, because now you've kind of turned your people against you, or
right.
at least momentarily.
Yeah, right. Rookie mistake.
Yeah, because the hissing really threw me off in the show. I was like, wow, because I didn't expect them to really revolt against her. So
they were mad.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, very good. Is there anything else, or is that it?
That is it, as far as I know.
Okay.
For this episode.
No, that's great. And then hopefully people like it kind of towards the end of the show, so that way you can just turn it off, so that way you don't have to worry about it. But I still think it's a really awesome component to the show, because it's something I'm very curious about as a fan of the TV show. So thank you, Nick, for putting that in there.
Sure.
All right, guys. Well, that is it for this week's Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. You can give us a call at 206-309-0311.
Calling time.
That's 206-309-0311. Calling time for questions, comments, and or theories.
Theories.
Also, you can send an email to jayandjack@gmail.com. You can also send it to lostpodcast@gmail.com if you are so obliged. You can also join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/jayandjackgroup for fun TV show discussions on Game of Thrones and much, much more. Also, be sure to check out our other podcasts, and we'll see you guys next time. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
Bye.